Today on the show, we have Justin Mast, founder and CEO of Bloomscape, a direct-to-consumer houseplant company. Justin is here fresh off a $15 million Series B from General Catalyst. Justin, thanks for being on the show.
Great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I think a great place to start would be with a quote from one of your investors, Joe Cutler, who is one of the founders and I think general partner at General Catalyst. He recently told TechCrunch that you'd be hard-pressed to find a team that understands a consumer vertical better than Bloomscape does with home gardening. I'd love to start with that, a little bit about how you started the company, what you've learned about consumer gardening. We can start with the product and then dive into the business model and go from there.
Sure. I think coming from Joel, that's a tremendous compliment. So I hope we've earned that compliment, but definitely appreciate Joel. I think what he's referring to is a few things. We're in a space with a pretty complicated backend. Shipping plants around the country is pretty challenging. It's hard enough to ship a tropical plant from Michigan to Boston in the dead of winter. Being able to do that thousands of times a day to every zip code in the US, 12 months out of the year, at scale, building a strong margin into the business, that's a whole other level. Fortunately, we're only 3 years old as a startup. We actually turned three like a week and a half ago. But the history of the business, sort of our DNA goes back a lot longer than that too. I grew up in a family business. My parents had large commercial greenhouses. Five generations on my dad's side of greenhouse owner operators, three generations back on my mom's side of people in the floriculture world. They were in kind of a niche corner of the business, shipping trays of young plants, seedlings and young plants to thousands of greenhouses around the country through FedEx. So I was able to watch and learn and see what they were doing on the commercial side that we've been able to really reappropriate and build that into the business for consumers.
Yeah, so let's dive right into the operations and the process. I think that process power is an interesting piece, especially in an industry as competitive as direct to consumer. So I know you have a patented model of how you actually ship these plants across the country. I believe you have your own greenhouses in Detroit where you're based. Could you walk us through beginning and production through distribution, how you actually build that out, and anything you've learned about scaling process?
Just to zoom out a little bit, as an entrepreneur, one of the things that's so critical for being able to build a great business is knowing where to focus and picking which battles to fight and when. We're always looking for ways to take advantage of existing infrastructure. We have an e-commerce backend that we've built around. We can ship through UPS. We can X, Y, and Z. I think what's unique about our line of business is that for many other direct-to-consumer brands, they can tap into a 3PL, third-party logistics backend to be able to manage and ship and distribute their product around the country. That's not something we were able to do. You can't have live plants move through traditional warehousing and shipping facilities. They need to be handled in a really special way. I think the closest comparison is the food business. We have a lot of really amazing direct-to-consumer food businesses like Daily Harvest, for example. But live plants are even more niche. And so for us, we really had to build out our own backend. And I like to say that behind the customer experience, behind the brand that we've built, we're really a plant logistics company. We have dozens of partners around the country, growers, greenhouses, some that we've been working with for decades or even generations that grow really high quality product for us. We bring it in from all over the country into our greenhouses in Michigan, where we clean the product and repot it. We use a number of techniques that allow us to ship it later. Sometimes we'll finish growing it. And then these are all in USDA certified facilities that allow us to ship the plants across state borders. And so this is really the backbone of our operation, knowing how to care for the plants in our environment, improve them, inventory them, keep them organized, and then move them through our own fulfillment centers. There's a lot of work that goes into that. And it's really one of the big things that sets us apart.
I know in D2C that weight to price ratio is really important. What is the price point that you typically sell these at?
I can talk about it qualitatively. We probably won't share any specific numbers, but I can say that for us, a lot of the margin can be gained or lost by how effectively we handle plants after they're grown, once we get them from the greenhouse, how effectively we move them from that grower to the customer is everything for us. We're selling plants that are on the smaller side, kind of windowsill size plants, but we go up to 5-6 foot tall indoor trees. And so the price range varies from $35, $40 all the way up to $200. For us, I think what you're referring to, that like weight to price ratio, I'm not sure who made the comment, but I know exactly what they're talking about. For us, it's a combination of weight, but also volume, the dim weight. Some of these boxes that we're shipping are like coffin size, and there's oversized fees, and there's kind of a unique formula that sets the price for the size and shape of the box that we pay very close attention to.
I'm interested in that shipping piece because you talked about the challenge of not having 3PLs that you could send plants through because they're plants. How have you figured out how to do that, shipping from Michigan to New York in the dead of winter? And what did you have to do to build out that infrastructure?
There are a couple aspects to this. First, Bloomscape is standing on the shoulders of businesses that have come before us. And in my case, family members, previous generations who were pioneering ways to ship plants through, first on trucks, then through UPS and FedEx. Maybe another way of putting it is we got a 10-year head start on this project based on that alone. But there are a lot of unique aspects to shipping directly to a customer. And then we're shipping plants that we had never worked with before too. So a lot of it is trial and error. You realize that some plants are very cold sensitive. Other plants are very heat sensitive. Some are only sensitive to cold when they've been in the box for too long. Some do just fine with heat. But if you combine that with not enough water or it being dark for too long, it can affect the quality of the plant. And we're at a stage now where a lot of that generalized knowledge, we've taken that as far as we can. And what we're doing now is we're using a pretty extensive database that we've kept on every plant we've shipped, hundreds of thousands of plants, everything that's possibly gone wrong, that's now feeding back into our system and guiding and really setting a lot of micro level decisions on the products we carry, which time of year, and how we ship them from point A to point B. So we've been able to really leverage data to really drive this next layer of improvement to how the whole system works.
Can you talk a little bit about the early days of Bloomscape when you were first figuring out how to do this? I find that's often one of the most interesting pieces, especially for entrepreneurs and aspiring entrepreneurs out there who are looking to do something similar.
Yeah. So for me, early days is a loaded term and mostly in a good way. I mean, like I said, this version of Bloomscape, we launched 3 years ago. And there was about a year that I spent working on getting the company ready prior to that. But I also started an earlier version of Bloomscape back in 2007 when I was fresh out of college. Already then was starting to work on ways to ship plants directly from, you know, fully grown, beautiful plants directly from the greenhouse to our customers. And so I spent about 6 months working out of the roof of a closet of a storage unit at some family greenhouses, trying to work on the process for how to ship these plants. And so I'm talking hundreds of boxes of plants getting rolled down flights of stairs to figure out the right combination of a binding agent in the soil, the right packaging type, the right ways of fixing and holding the pot in the box and securing the foliage. So there was an R&D phase that lasted about 6 months that was definitely part of the early days that I was able to pull forward into this launching of Bloomscape. And then there's the early days, me as an 8 or 9 year old selling plants for my parents' greenhouse on the street corner out in front and with my cousin Ben. And that was a whole other kind of version of the early days of Bloomscape too.
So you're actually a third generation greenhouse plant grower and consumer plant gardening seller.
Yeah, it goes back 5 generations of greenhouse owner operators on my dad's side. But I'm really the first to try to get into doing retail, selling directly to the customer.
Adopting it for the internet age. That's what they call founder market fit. That's fascinating. And so you actually started it and then you shut down the first iteration before building this?
Yeah. Yeah, the version in 2007, I was at that time hyper-focused on figuring out a way to ship plants. Built a cool brand, got the site up, but really had no conception for how to market the product. We were, at this point, you know, this was 2007. It was a whole different universe on how to build a digitally native business back then. We actually were getting a fair amount of organic traction, but we weren't venture backed. And there was a pretty big shift in the family businesses. An uncle of mine ended up buying greenhouses that I was operating out of. And without funding, without a secure supply chain, it just didn't make sense at that point anymore. So I was like, oh, I'll move on to the next thing. I went and helped start another business and kept my entrepreneurial journey going. But Bloomscape was always the one that got away. It was like the project, man, this should have worked. This, someone will do this at some point. And after a while, just realized, you know what? I think if I want to see this done, I'm going to have to do it myself. And so that's why I restarted it.
That's an incredible story. It must have been really hard the first time. And what inspired you to pick it up again the second time? That must have been challenging.
I think part of it was just the smoldering desire to see it built and a reality in the world. And I think that's something I'd carried for the decade in between. But I started to learn a bit more about the direct-to-consumer model, how it worked with venture capital. And I've got a close friend here in Detroit who's one of the co-founders of Floyd Furniture. And so they were, I think, three or four years into their launch at that point. I think they had just raised the Series A and learned a ton from him on all the kind of core unit economics and business model fundamentals for direct-to-consumer. And that really inspired me to start going back to the drawing board on how to craft a business model around this that could really grow quickly and provide a lot of value fast.
Can you talk a little bit about direct-to-consumer in general and some of those business lessons that you've learned? It's a fascinating space, but I think also a challenging one for people on the outside to sometimes understand, because whereas SaaS is pretty understandable why they're great margin businesses, some of these consumer businesses are cutthroat and extremely difficult. So if you could you just talk through the kind of key metrics in this space?
The things we're watching very closely and that have been consistent from day one, we're looking at our average order value, so AOV and CAC, how much it costs to acquire a new customer, and our margin. And that's our first purchase economics we're watching. And ideally, you're making money on the first purchase. It costs you less to market and get the product to someone's door than you make. And the other big important metric that we're watching is our repeat purchase rates and our LTV. How much are people spending in the first year, first 3 years? And I think if you can get that set of core economics, then you can scale something and really build on that. That's the sort of micro or sort of unit level economics. Then you zoom out and look at the macro, and we're looking at our TAM, how big is the market? And then you're thinking pretty holistically about how competitive the space is and what are your real moats. And that's something that we watch pretty closely. I think we have and are trying to build or deepen a couple moats all at once. But it really is an exploration. There are surprises and learnings along the way that really have shifted our thinking there as well.
What are the core moats that you think Bloomscape has?
Our initial moat has been the supply chain. It is an insanely complex back end. You don't get to take a lot of shortcuts. And I think what's nice is that for new competitors coming into the space, they can't really take advantage of any of the ground we've already gained. They have to start from zero on their own journey of building up a supply chain that works. That's a big one. I think the direct relationship with the customer, which I would say is both brand, but also the way that we help people care for their plants and really grow as gardeners. That's turned out to be a really important moat for us too. We really stick with people after they get their plants. And so in helping people keep their plants alive, be better at caring for plants, we find that people want to garden more, and that really helps us grow the business.
Yeah, it's amazing. I think every one of those metrics that you mentioned and the moats are all things that I'd love to dive into. Before we do, I'd love to dive into the brand in general. This is a very much brand-driven space, and it sounds like you came very much from the plant growing side, but not necessarily from the digital brand direct-to-consumer space. It sounds like you're the first of many generations to come at it from that angle. What have you learned about building a brand, and how do you engage with consumers and maintain that stellar relationship?
Yeah, I think the big thing is right now the dominant way of buying plants is at a big box store at mass retail. So Walmart, Lowe's, Home Depot, those are the big players in the space. These are retail environments that really disconnect the customer from any sense of who are we buying these plants from? Where did they come from? It's not what I would call an authentic brand experience. And I think one thing we really benefit from is we have a very real story on why we're in the plant business and why we're trying to improve things and make things better here. So from a brand standpoint, part of it is just telling that story and being true to ourselves and what we're trying to share with people.
So one other thing that I would love to touch on, it's your recent acquisition of another company, Vera. I believe it's an app that's focused on plant care, and most importantly, it's subscription-based. So that would be a move from direct one-off revenue to ongoing subscription revenue with no cost of goods because it's software. So how do you think about that and how you're expanding your relationship with the consumer?
Yeah, so Vera, what ends with us acquiring Vera starts much earlier than that, right when we launched the company. And what we realized is that content would be a lot different for us than it is and was for a lot of other direct-to-consumer brands. So we had an FAQ, we had some fun content on the site, but right when we launched, we started getting thousands of questions from our customers, everything from what are these brown spots on my fiddly fig leaves to how do I convince my parents to help buy me more plants to how often do I repot, when do I water, you name it. And mostly from a customer experience and a brand building standpoint, we decided to lean into that and really build our brand around helping people care for plants, like you just said. The farther we've pursued that quest, the farther we've gone down the pathway of creating value there, the more that we find that it also happens to be extremely beneficial to the business model as well. And so we have an ongoing conversation with our customers. They keep coming back to us and asking questions like what care products they should buy, that we know this plant worked well for them, what other plants will we recommend? And once we started to get those pro business model signals back from our customer base, we knew we could start to really invest more heavily into this passion of ours beyond where we even started. And so as we look to really scale this like personalized plant care experience, we talked to our customers, we did a lot of research, we spent hours visiting customers and non-customers in their homes, talking to them about their plant care routines. And we found that people like to keep lists of their plants. They like to keep a journal of how they care for their plants. And they use those journals to talk to whoever it is that they consider a plant care expert for getting advice on what to do next and what product to buy. And so that excited us. We started to think about digitizing that experience and building a more scalable way of replicating that experience for more customers. And we started to look at developing our own app. And in doing the research for that, we realized there were a couple of other apps out there that we really liked, one in particular. And we were doing mockups, watching, really like benchmarking our product, what we wanted to build against what they had, and realized that it was a really cool development shop out of Kansas City that had been doing a Friday free time project to build up Vera as an app. And that we reached out directly and that got a conversation started about what it would look like to join forces. And one thing led to another that ultimately came to us making an offer to buy the app from them. And it's our customers have loved it.
Yeah, it's a fascinating story. And I imagine will be a huge business driver moving forward. I think that leads well into top of funnel customer acquisition, which I always find interesting. In this space, it seems like a huge proportion of it would be Facebook and Google ads and online marketing. What does that CAC look like and how do you think about customer acquisition?
The way we initially got the word out on Bloomscape wasn't directly through Facebook and Google. We started off with a very press and PR focused launch. And we found that we've got a story that people like to tell and share, both our customers and the press and influencers alike. So that was how we really loaded the top of our funnel initially. We used Google and Facebook to really drive a retargeting campaign that just kept in front of people and kept reminding our fans that we're here. But since then, it's been a kind of methodical process of adding channels and adding layers to our marketing stack over this last, you know, few years. We're working in the affiliate space, we're working in social, both paid ads, but also organic and with influencers. We've actually found a lot of traction in some of the traditional awareness driving out-of-home marketing tactics. For us, it's a big mix. Different times of year, like spring is a big time where a lot of people, plants are top of mind. People are thinking about plants already. So we have a certain strategy that drives a lot of our traffic and revenue in the spring. And that's different than in the summer and in the winter.
On the customer side, it sounds like you know your customer really well. What does your target customer look like? And how do you reach them? I know you just acquired a company, Vera, which I think plays into this a bit.
Our customer base has certain demographics, but we actually pay closer attention to the psychographics. And what we're finding is that there are a couple of key profiles that make up different Bloomscape customers. And so a big group of our customers are people who are new to plants, but very enthusiastic. And so we're meeting a lot of people who realize that they want plants in their lives to kind of complement an increasingly digital video life and at-home life, in some cases stressful life. For them, plants are a way to spend time connected to nature, slowing down, doing something that's, you know, very restorative. And this is a customer that deeply cares about the quality of the plants, but is also someone we talk to really frequently with plant care and helping people grow and learn as gardeners. We also have a different customer profile that is, I'd say, equally interested in high quality plants, but loves the convenience of being able to go online, pick a few things out, click buy, and just have it show up ready and looking awesome right at their door. That's the big fork in the road. Are people more interested in that gardening experience or the convenience? And then from there, it really breaks down into a whole lot of other factors that we watch pretty closely. And it's a younger group. It's overwhelmingly millennial and Gen Z. Probably a lot of the stuff that you're used to hearing in direct to consumer. Slightly affluent, somewhat more city centric millennial or Gen Z. That's our core customer base. Although I will say we've seen that move out to the suburbs and the countryside quite a bit in the last year.
With that in mind, the slightly more city focused and what we've talked about customer acquisition, I've seen a lot of D2C companies lately start to move into pop-up retail and some into permanent retail. How do you think about retail as a potential channel?
I mean, at our core, we're a retailer. Our mission is really to reinvent the garden center for a new generation of plant lover. Like any modern retail brand, we're starting digitally native and we're selling online and shipping all over the country. That doesn't mean we're exclusive to e-commerce. And over time, we'll start to, I think, explore new channels and new ways of talking to our customers and meeting people where they're at. I will say, I think we'll continue. We have such a strong core value of making sure that people have the highest quality plants. And that's almost always when they come directly from the greenhouse. I think something we're critical of is when, you know, plants spend a week in a fluorescent lit retail environment without a lot of care, maybe a staff that doesn't quite know how to care for plants well, or maybe can't given the space that they're in. We're not big fans of setting people up with plants that are already half dead, thanks to the fact that they've sat in a retail environment. And so whatever it is we do, we'll hold that value and make sure that whatever we do at the retail is on the retail side of things is value add there without pulling away from that.
Yeah. So I think you've grown something like 4x over the past year or so, prior to bringing on the 15 million. What are you planning on using that 15 million for? And what are your priorities over the next year or so?
I mean, building the business, we're building out the supply chain and we're moving to a regional distribution model where we are able to ship closer to our customers. So that's a big part of it. And we're scaling the business. We've grown the team quite a bit in the past year. and we've expanded into outdoor plants. So we launched with a focus on indoor plants, succulents, cactuses, and foliage plants. But this couple of weeks ago, we just launched a line of outdoor plants focused on porch and patio. And so we're helping extend that plant life experience out from the living room onto the front porch and the back patio. And getting that launched, it took really creating a completely different backend infrastructure to be able to ship these really high quality outdoor plants. And so that was something we used the capital for, was to launch that.
So I guess that's one of the core ways you plan to expand your TAM, is to be going into outdoor plants as well. It sounds like the vision is to be the everything store for any kind of plant you could possibly want, shipped from Michigan to anywhere in the country, or I guess potentially the world. And given the raise and the expansion, it sounds like you're hiring a ton as well. Any key roles that you're hiring for that we might be able to help you place?
Yeah, absolutely. Our careers section on the site keeps the kind of the most active running list of what we're hiring for. But at this point, we're looking for everything from a copywriter to a new VP of people to an additional indoor plant buyer. There's, you name it, from marketing to merchandising to supply chain and core people functions. We're building up the entire team right now.
Yeah, I will definitely link to that in the show notes. Are you based fully out of Detroit right now or also remote?
We're headquartered in Detroit. We have a satellite office in New York where a chunk of our team is based. And then we have people spread throughout the country where our supply chain is. So we have people in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where our greenhouses are. And then we've got people down in Florida where a lot of our indoor plant growers are.
Sounds fascinating. I will take a look along with, I'm sure, a ton of our listeners. I guess that is a pretty good segue actually into the fact that you're based in Detroit versus most of the D2C companies that we see, I think, are based in often places like New York or LA. And those companies in particular tend to be very founder driven, whereas I think some of the D2C companies in other regions are often more company and brand driven, less an influencer business and more of a process business, kind of like yours. What's it like building outside of one of those core regions? And has that been difficult over the course of the business?
I think there are some big advantages to building a direct-to-consumer business outside of the coast. In Detroit in particular is what I can speak to, but we've got an extremely talented and creative group of people here that are great to work with. So we've got a really, just being in Detroit, we're 5 hours away, I think, from six or seven of our country's top 20 universities. So whether it's like a world-class packaging program at Michigan State or engineers coming out of U of M or Pittsburgh, we've access to plenty of talent. And there are just some cool advantages to being in a place like Detroit that you wouldn't have on the coast. We actually just moved into our new office space, which is this pretty massive. It's a 12,000 square foot building. It used to be a grocery store that we've converted into our offices. A company of our size and stage could never do this somewhere else. And so we're pretty happy being here. I will say the art is to not be isolated or a purist about it. We partner with investors from all over the country. We hire into Detroit from all over the country. We have the satellite office in New York for certain roles there. And our group of advisors and the people we look to for advice on running a direct-to-consumer business or scaling, we've made a real effort to be strongly networked and tapped into a great community. And so that's been the way that we've been able to bridge the gap and be based in Detroit, but get the best of both worlds in a lot of ways.
I'd love to dive into the venture race. And you've raised from some stellar VCs like Joel Cutler, the founder of General Catalyst, who we mentioned at the top, but also a ton of really great, successful D2C founders, companies like Allbirds and Away and Eventbrite and Harry's, Warby Parker. I think that's fascinating. So if you could tell us a little bit about how you put together that cohort, and then also maybe a little bit about this most recent raise with General Catalyst, would love to dive in.
Sure. Whenever I'm fundraising, I'm always looking for people I can learn from and that we can learn from, and people that seem to really best understand our unique advantages as a business. And in this last round, the Series A, we were starting to scale quickly. I was really looking for founders that had scaled direct-to-consumer businesses, but done so in ways that seemed to really preserve or in some cases amplify their founding values. And so you couldn't find better founders than folks like Joey at Allbirds or Neil and Dave at Warby Parker, who are really best in class when it comes to that. And we were able to lean on our network, get introductions just to be able to tell our story. I think they saw something that was both compelling and that they felt was both a good business model, but I think they saw something they felt like they could help or play a positive role in. And it builds, one thing builds on the next, how fundraising goes. Once you have people starting to vouch for you and show interest, it just keeps building on itself. And that's been a big part of it. And I would say there are the strategic investors we've brought in who I think we are very fortunate, because a lot of times, I'll just say our strategic investors have been true advisors to Bloomscape and to me. And so I think we're really fortunate to have the group that we have there. And then there's the other side of it, which is finding the lead investor. And the thing I've seen is that when we're fundraising, we talk to a lot of people. I pitch to a number of people. We end up in deeper conversations, see term sheets from a number of different groups. But it always seems to work best with people who understand that there are really structural advantages to building a brand like ours when you've got the kind of, I would say, like founder market fit that we have, as well as structural advantages to being in a place like Detroit. We are who we are. We've chosen to be here. It probably sounds obvious that you end up resonating most with people who get that and are excited about those things about us.
I think that focus on brand is a really powerful way to build a business and resonates with today's consumer in a way that is necessary to build a D2C business at scale. How do you think about an exit in this space? You are fairly unique in your focus on a very differentiated product. It doesn't ship in a typical box. They're plants of all shapes and sizes. They're very much alive. But a lot of these brands, once they're at a certain scale, I'm thinking brands like Quip or Casper or Way, some of these others, Allbirds, it's unclear how much larger they can get with their existing TAM. It looks like you've carved out some really interesting ways to expand that TAM, but how do you think about exits in the D2C space in general? Do you think roll-ups are something that might be interesting, or are you looking at a more long-term vision?
We're looking pretty long-term. I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all approach to exiting as a direct-to-consumer business, but I'll say we're trying to reinvent the entire garden center and craft a retail experience, a new retail experience for a whole new generation of gardeners. Retail lawn and garden is over $50 billion, and it's a space that has not seen a lot of disruption or change in decades. And we see a lot of runway in front of us. We see a lot of room to keep growing and innovating and building. And that's what we'll stay focused on. I think whether it's eventually teaming up with a giant retailer that has had a hard time cracking the code here or going public, I think I'll continue to consider those opportunities against our big vision.
What do you think is the most surprising and maybe interesting thing that you've found building this business about your customers, about plants in general, about the process and production and distribution? What's most surprising?
I'll say the thing that it feels a little like a surprise, but in a surprising way, is how important plants are for people. And I say that this is a surprising surprise because this is coming from someone who grew up in the plant business, was surrounded by plants, and got to spend a ton of time in greenhouses and seeing this directly. I think to say that I've always known how important plants are for people is an understatement. And yet in launching Bloomscape and having these conversations with our customers, and I would add, in seeing how people have responded this past year to the pandemic and all the anxiety and the stress that's come from that, and how people have really found solace or health in their interaction with plants has surpassed even what I think the importance of plants, even beyond what I realized it was. This is something that has been very encouraging for us as a team to see. And I think such an honor to be able to build a business that is playing a role in people's lives that is great and that we feel really good about.
It must be pretty powerful as well for you, coming from a family of greenhouse cultivators, to be building this yourself to such a scale.
We love plants, but like, I hadn't been naming my plants or any number of other things. And I think we've seen our customers are so passionate about their plants, and we love it.
My last question is, what's your vision for the company? So where do you see this in 25 years? Where do you hope to be?
For us, we're driven by this passion to connect people with plants, make buying and caring for plants a whole lot simpler for everyone. So we want everyone to feel like a master gardener. And I think that North Star has already pushed us and guided us into some pretty interesting places. I think in the future, we'll have built out that experience across the whole garden center. So not just indoor plants and patio plants, but gardening, landscaping, the full stack, the kind of operating system we're building around helping you care for your plants, and watering reminders and repotting tips that's really hyper customized for you. I think we're just getting started on how far we can push that and how easy we can make caring for plants be for people. And so for me, that's the big vision.
Well, it's beautiful. I'm a customer. Obviously, I may have to sign up for the app and become a more consistent customer. I really appreciate you coming on the show. And yeah, thanks so much. It's been great to talk about Bloomscape, and looking forward to sharing this with all of our listeners.
Thank you, Joe.